The following audio is machine generated. Please excuse any mispronunciations. Work and Faith, Why and How Christians Work by Steve Hinton. I never really thought much about Labor Day. It's probably because for most of my years in vocational ministry, I have taken Monday as my Sabbath day. Thus, I was already off on Labor Day. Recently, however, I began to chew on labor ethics and connected how much the Bible has to say about work. Perhaps an official day set aside to honor labor is not such a bad idea. Following celebrations in Oregon and other states, Congress on June 28, 1894, declared a National Labor Day to be the first Monday in September. Today, the U.S. Department of Labor describes the holiday as a time when we pause as a nation to celebrate the contributions that American workers have made to the strength, prosperity, integrity, and overall health of our great country. The government site continues, noting that American labor has raised the nation's standard of living and contributed to the greatest production the world has ever known, and the labor movement has brought us closer to the realization of our traditional ideals of economic and political democracy. While the Department of Labor acknowledges the blessings of the U.S. workforce, it fails to connect the dots on the theology behind the work. For example, consider the value placed on labor in the former Soviet Union, and yet its inability to keep up with America's creativity and ultimately productivity. The difference was in the theological reason for labor, which the Soviets lacked. To fully understand the strength, prosperity, and integrity of American work history, we must honestly acknowledge its roots in what some have called the Protestant work ethic. The late sociologist Rodney Stark maintained that notions of the dignity of labor were incomprehensible in ancient Rome or any other pre-capitalist society. Though Stark fails to mention the Hebrew culture before Rome, he rightly notes that capitalism was indeed linked to a Christian ethic. That ethic was, in short, driven by the belief that because a rational and creative God created us, in turn, we ourselves should use our minds and God-given talents to produce. God worked in creation, and it was good. God created Adam and Eve in his image, and they worked the garden, and it was good. Work was not problematic until sin entered the picture in Genesis 3:17 to 19. And from that time on, we've encountered one dysfunctional working relationship after another. No system is perfect outside of God's design. Even capitalism, as we'll see, can go awry when the goal of cash is placed above concern for people. However, in Christ, we find not only salvation, but the promise of restoration of all areas of our lives, including our work environments. And so, as disciples of Jesus, how can we look at work differently from the world? Let me offer six truths and practices that will help us move from merely working out of duty to a life where work can be a delight, regardless of the task before us. I believe work can be wonderful when we remember that God made work good. One, we work to participate with God. It's an amazing thing to think about. The God of all creation, through our work, invites us to join him in ongoing creation. We might think of creation in the initial sense of Genesis 1 and 2, but God has not ceased working. Jesus spoke to this reality in John 5:17, declaring that my Father is always at his work to this very day, and I too am working. Therefore, when we see ourselves as created by God and for a purpose, it naturally follows that we are called to work alongside God. In Ephesians 5:1, Paul connects this to the fact that because we are children of God, we are to be imitators of God. And among that statement's many applications, joining him in creating good in a fallen world is certainly one of them. Additionally, Paul affirms to us that we are co-workers in God's service. 1 Corinthians 3, 9a, NIV. I love the way Ephesians 2:10 weaves two foundational truths together. On one hand, as His grace saves us, we are also created to be His beautiful handiwork. From there, it is out of this unique workmanship done in us by God that we move to serve. We do not do these works to earn salvation, but because of what He has done for and in us. In this inner transformation, we now have not only an opportunity, but a responsibility to join God in creating good in the world around us. Two, we work to worship God. If that statement sounds off, it may be due to a myth that has been around in numerous forms, probably all the way back to Genesis 4, 3-8. It's the idea that we have two types of work, sacred and secular. The first describes the vocational religious people like ministers and missionaries, and the other, well, everybody else. Because of this mistake, many tend to consider worship as something done in a church building on Sunday mornings, separate from the rest of our lives. However, we just don't see that concept in the Bible. Yes, the Bible includes designated priests, prophets, and apostles. Additionally, though, there were also kings like David who prayerfully wrote Psalm 23. Peter referred to all the disciples of Jesus as a royal priesthood, regardless of their vocation. 1 Peter 2:9. With this in mind, Paul instructed that whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him, Colossians 3:17 and Auernfeuve. In thinking again about the idea of a Protestant work ethic, it was Martin Luther who declared, "Your work is a very sacred matter. God delights in it, and through it, He wants to best His blessings on you. This praise of work should be inscribed on all tools, on the forehead and the faces that sweat from toiling." That perspective brings honor not only to our vocation, but to every task we put our hands to. With that in mind, we can see everything we do as an honor and take pride in it. I believe this is why we ought to resurrect the principle of craftsmanship back into our work. We live in a world of the quick and the cheap. How beautiful might the world become when we see all that we do as our God-given craft, something that we put our heart and sweat into rather than merely going through motions to make it through the day with only retirement as our end goal. Three. We work regardless of the fit. I remember hearing Max Lucado speak several years ago about serving in our sweet spot. It's the idea of remembering God's unique creation in each of us and working from that place. As Peter instructed, we should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. 1 Peter 4:10, NY5. In Romans 12 and 1 Corinthians 12, Paul likens the church to a human body that desperately needs all its various and unique parts serving in their God-given capacity. I agree and confess that it's a lot easier to find joy when we're serving in areas that are a natural fit for us. It's like when the Scottish Olympian and missionary Eric Liddell said, "God made me for China, but He also made me fast. When I run, I feel His pleasure." I get that and long to point people toward their God-given directions. But here's the rub. What about the times when we simply cannot serve in our sweet spot? What about our grandparents or great-grandparents who grew up in the Great Depression, where the only question was, how can I put food on the table? You know, just eat. What about the young person right out of college or new in the workforce when they must do their time before the best fit arises or is earned? The tough truth is that sometimes, really most times throughout our lives, work will not be according to our desire. It's always been like this. But in those moments, our true faith through a transformed work ethic shines like a lighthouse on the eastern seaboard. Sometimes at work, simply doing one's duty, even when it's not enjoyable, is truly the noble path. 4, we work for the long game. We are beneficiaries of work done before we came along. For a moment, mull over the majestic interstate highway system available to us for travel across this massive continent because of the labor done by those decades ago. Yes, the labor of those generations before us blesses us today. On a much larger time frame, I am reminded of the great cathedrals of Europe that took generations to complete. Yes, what we do today can likewise bless generations to come. And today we suffer not only from a lack of heartfelt craftsmanship, but a lack of determination to see a work through to its glorious end. Not only cheap, but quick is often the name of the game. Quick numbers and quick dollars have slowly degraded not only the quality of work, but also our ethic and the character. The larger long game, though, is eternity. Honestly, this can be a tough one for me in vocational ministry, as I don't always see the fruit of my effort, and sometimes I wonder if it amounts to anything. Maybe that's why we throw in the towel at times. We don't see a reason for labor and question whether it's worth it. Does anyone see? Does anyone care? In times like this, my wife brilliantly reminds me of eternity and the fact that God does see, care about, and will reward my effort. Maybe that's what Paul was doing for the church in Galatia when he encouraged the first Christians to not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Galatians 6:9. Similarly, the most quoted verse I use in thank you cards is the latter portion of 1 Corinthians 15:58, NIV, as Paul reminds the first disciples to always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. 5, we work while honoring the work of others. Work can go wrong when it's all about us and done at others' expense. When you consider the harshness of early American capitalist tycoons like Andrew Carnegie, John D. Rockefeller, and J.P. Morgan, you can see why early labor unions were formed. But when considering a work ethic derived from God, Daniel McCoy, editorial director for Renew.org, rightly reminds us that because of this tendency toward corruption and exploitation, the Jewish law puts into place various laws for the protection of the common worker. A work can also go wrong when we consume the fruit of others without adding to the benefit ourselves. We see this in Paul's admonition that anyone who has been stealing must steal no longer, but must work, doing something useful with their own hands, that they may have something to share with those in need. Ephesians 4:28. But the goal here is not simply to turn away from abuse, but to build an environment of encouragement and praise for the work of others, regardless of the task. Unfortunately, we live in a culture that assigns value to people by the rank and novelty of their work or career. James 2:2-4, however, forthrightly condemns showing favoritism to those with fine clothes and those without. So regardless of the type of work one does, the call is to encourage and genuinely thank others for their labor. If we're serious about loving others like Jesus loves us, this is especially true when we consider those who may never receive praise for their work. I was in junior high when Donna Summer released a song about discovering a bathroom attendant at a high-end Hollywood restaurant who had fallen asleep from exhaustion after working multiple jobs to pay her bills. And the memorable line was, "She works hard for her money, so you better treat her right." This whole principle is often why I take the time to look someone in the eye and thank them for their work. 6, we work with rhythms of Sabbath. The champion Japanese work ethic is a thing. They even have a word for it, karoshi, or death by overwork. A strong work ethic without Sabbath can easily become an idol, and idols do not bring life. This happens when we trust our own efforts above God, from whom every good and perfect gift ultimately comes. When remembering the reasons for the Hebrew captivities, it was not only because of Baal worship, but also because of a refusal to keep the Sabbath, 2 Chronicles 36:21. The problem was their trust in their own economic efforts over God's provision. The principle of taking a Sabbath is to trust in God, not our labor, James 1:17. Sure, we want to avoid legalism, as Jesus constantly attacked it with the Pharisees, but ignoring the subject can also be detrimental to our own being, as what it says to a watching world. Another noteworthy example of Eric Little was his refusal to compete on Sundays, and in the end, God took care of the runner. Interestingly, the principle of resting benefits us, because when we return our hand to the plow after resting, we do it with much more focus and energy, and with the inner trust that God will take care of us more than we can take care of ourselves. So one of my early jobs in late elementary school was cutting the grass for an uncle who is a strong Christian. From the get-go of our business arrangements, he made it clear that I was not to come over and cut the lawn on Sundays. Today, when I ask a local teenage boy to cut my grass, I say the same thing, hoping it might provide a teaching moment of God and work without a sermon. 7, we work for a witness to the world. Jesus said that we are salt and light of the earth, Matthew 5:13-14. So, what kind of witness are we bringing to our workplace? Are we griping about the boss or other employees? Are we continually checking the clock? Are we cutting corners in quality? Or on the other hand, are we the ones who look at our labor as a divinely assigned craft to be carried out with our heart and energy, knowing that ultimately our purpose is not merely for the next payday and personal pleasure? People will notice the latter, and it may be one reason Peter challenged the early disciples to always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. 1 Peter 3:15 on NIV. Here's the truth. Not always, but often when people see a different work ethic in us, they will see a glimpse of a larger picture of God. Though they may never hear a sermon on Sunday from a vocational minister, they might see a speck of the divine in how we carry out our daily tasks. Yes, the way we look at work really can point people toward eternity and make our individual piece of the planet a better place. I was part of a large Boy Scout troop growing up. After every camp out, we'd line up and police the area to make sure we not only, you know, cleaned up all our trash, but also made the place better than before we came. Imagine what a witness to the world our work could be if we looked at our labor not as a burden, but as an opportunity to co-create with God something better in the lives of others. Yes, celebrating work can be good when we ponder the deeper issues at play, the divine connection. So, yes, I'll give a cheer and fanfare of praise for Labor Day. Fanfare for the uncommon work. While meditating on the honor of work, I was reminded of a famous American composer. His name was Aaron Copland, and he was known for his ability to capture the imagery of large Western landscapes in his music. During World War II, Copland was asked to compose a symphony that, in his words, would honor everyday Americans who worked and faithfully paid their taxes on the home front to support the war effort abroad. The result was the epic feeling piece, The Fanfare for the Common Man, with its bold brass and powerful percussion-laden introduction. It very much has a noble feel and is so worthy of the unnoticed, but so necessary labor of so many. In God's economy, there is no common man. There is no caste system of value. The heart and hands of someone working a minimum wage job for the glory of Jesus will make God smile more than those of anyone at the top of a Fortune 500 company who serves only themselves. And so be encouraged today. Encourage others. Go out and co-build something with God that will last not simply for the next paycheck, but quite possibly for eternity. For footnotes, see the article at renew.org.